Mr. Atkin, Reel 10. Were there ever any instances of sabotage on the building site, on the construction?
Yes, we were laying a very heavy electrical cable outside the camp, and it was very heavy work. For a week we were doing that, and then the Polish partisans blew it up. And then it became obvious to the Germans and to us that the work will never be finished. Probably the Russian front was coming too close and the building work was abandoned.
When you say Polish partisans blew it up, did they work there or did they just come in?
No, they didn't. They didn't work there. There were men who were active in the countryside, outside Częstochowa. We did see two Polish men, which presumed they were partisans, being captured and taken at the gunpoint by the Germans.
Did they come at night and blow up the cable?
They didn't come into the camp, but yes, that happened at night. The blowing up of the cable, that happened during the night. It became obvious to us and to everybody else that the building work will be useless. The machinery already began to arrive in the crates, but then it was shipped back to Germany soon afterwards. This was July 1944, and we realized we heard rumors that we would be evacuated to Germany.
What did you know by now what kind of a building you were making and what was going to be produced?
We didn't know. We didn't know what was going to be made in those buildings.
Were you pleased that the building would not be finished?
Well, we always knew that Germany would lose the war and it was only a matter of time. And we knew that the question was, will we survive until then?
Why were you so sure that Germany would lose the war?
Well, first of all, we were hopeful, we were hoping. So I think that was the main reason. But also we felt, well, the whole world is fighting Germany and they cannot possibly win. That was the conviction of almost everybody from the first moment. And the moment we knew that the Americans are fighting as well and the Russians, and we just took it for granted. That it was only a matter of time. Will they survive another year or another month or another 2 years?
Whilst you were in this work camp, were you able to gain information about the events of the war, how the war was going? What information?
Well, the Polish free workers, yes, we knew about we knew what was going on. We didn't have long discussions about it because you only exchanged few words about it, and we knew about Auschwitz. We heard about from the Poles. And we were afraid. We were, on the other hand, we were somehow at the back of our minds, we knew that the Germans are not likely to let us survive. So it was this anxiety at the back of our minds, but there was hope.
What were relationships like, other than the passing of food, which was obviously an economic transaction? What were relationships like with the Polish free workers? After all, they'd been very anti-Semitic previously.
Yes, there were some arguments and there were some quarrels even, although the Poles were so much better off than we were. And some of them were anti-Semitic. And once when I went for the soup, one of the Polish free workers sort of poured a bucket of water onto me from the roof, which was very unpleasant, because I realized that there is still, and he was laughing, there was still this sort of hatred against us, although we were in such terrible situation. But there was one Pole who told me he didn't want to buy anything from anyone to exchange for food. He said, and that moved me, he said, I don't want to enrich myself on other people's misfortune. So there was this, that somehow opened my eyes, and I thought, here is a Pole who said such things, but majority of them were just interested in buying a watch, exchanging it for a few loaves of bread, and probably that watch was worth 10 times more than what they gave for it.
Were they very anti-German as well?
They were anti-Germans, and the bricklayers, for example, were telling us, we do as little work as possible. Before the war, if we didn't lay 1,000 bricks a day, we wouldn't be able to work. Now we lay 100 bricks a day, and we do as little work as possible because we are trying to sabotage what the Germans are doing, which was exactly what we were doing. But somehow they got away with it and we got away with it at that time. Earlier on, I think it was harder to do that. But in 1944, I think it was easier to get away with such an attitude.
Were there any other prisoners brought to the concentration camp to join you during the time you were there, or did it remain stable?
It wasn't a sort of a concentration camp as such. It was a working camp. There was another camp nearby which was full of Russian prisoners of war. We saw them from a distance for a while, but the Polish free workers, they told us what happened to them. There were 10,000 people, 10,000 Russian prisoners of war, and they didn't have any buildings at all. They put them in the fields to sleep, and they fed them on cabbage soup only. And the cabbages were eaten by caterpillars. Therefore, the men began to die of dysentery very quickly. 10 of the officers were fed good food, and they were engaged in digging the mass graves and burying those that were dying, those that died. And when the 10,000 were virtually gone, the 10 officers were shot. So with 10 bullets, they managed to kill 10,000 Russian prisoners of war.
Was this well known in your camp?
It was well known in my camp. It was the Polish free. We used to see the Russian prisoners of war from a distance.
Did this have a demoralizing effect?
Well, by then, nothing would have surprised us about the Germans, so that it was... Then there were other rumors, you see, which we heard about the Russians. That at the beginning of the war with Russia, which was 1941, the Germans captured millions of prisoners of war, because they were virtually surrendering. Some of them considered that they were being liberated rather than invaded. But when they realized what the Germans were doing to them, simply murdering them, since that time, when some of the Russians managed to run away and inform the other soldiers what happened, since then the Germans were unable to capture any prisoners of war. That's why we were needed for the work, because before that time they had an unlimited supply of unskilled labour.
Were there, you mentioned before fleas in the bedding.
Yes.
Were there any...
That was a nightmare because we couldn't sleep. There were also lice, body lice appeared, but they took us to a, one day they took us to a place across Częstochowa. We walked for a number of miles, and there to a steam laundry, and everything we wore went into the steam laundry, and we had showers and soap, disinfecting soap, and that of course got rid of the body lice. And we walked back in this damp clothing. It was a very depressing experience. But what happened, in the straw there were thousands if not millions of fleas, and that became so unbearable that I started sleeping outside the shed in the sand. I preferred to sleep outside. The nights were not so cold. This was the summer of 1944, and I preferred to sleep outside in the sand, in the clean sand, than on the straw for a while. And later, but then towards the end, we were, when we were embarking up on the train to take us to Buchenwald, we were not told that we were going to Buchenwald, but we knew we were going towards to Germany. The other people were brought into our camp, and we could see the straw was being burnt and fresh straw was being put in its place. And the men who came to our camp came from Skarżysko, and they were in a terrible state. They were yellow, but not the chrome yellow, because they were working in some ammunition factories without any protective clothing. And they were, well, as really yellow, not like Chinese people whom you call they are yellow. They were really bright yellow color. And I don't think many of them survived because of the...
They arrived at your camp before you
They arrived in our camp when we were being evacuated.
Were there any other health problems? Did you suffer from dysentery at all?
Not in Częstochowa, no. Not at all.
So other than the fleas and the lice, physically people managed quite well?
Yes, yes, in a way. I think I became stronger in Częstochowa than I was in the ghetto, physically stronger because of the physical work. And I quite sort of enjoyed the digging. Some of the work I didn't like, but the digging of various trenches, that I somehow enjoyed.
How long did you remain at this work camp?
Until August, beginning of August 1944.
How did you first find out that you were going to be leaving this camp?
We were told one day that the following day we would be moved. We will go on by train, was announced at the roll call.
Were there any preparations you had to make to leave the camp?
No, not really. We had very few belongings. We just... I managed to meet one of the ex-Russian soldiers who was now in the German uniform, and he gave me a loaf of bread, and he embraced me. And we didn't speak, but somehow... obviously, I was very grateful to him that he gave me the bread for the journey. And it was again cattle wagons, and the sliding doors were open on both sides of the wagon, and barbed wire was put across the opening. and a soldier, a German soldier, was in the middle, so that he was in the open, so to speak, and we were 30 men were behind the barbed wire on one side of the wagon and 30 on the other, with a sort of a door made of barbed wire that the soldier could open if he wanted to let us out. And
did you all go together, all 600?
All together, the 600, in one transport.
Did you have any idea where you were going? You'd mentioned that you knew
We were going to Germany, but the word Buchenwald we didn't know. Well, I didn't know. And the journey took 7 days and seven nights. The weather was very nice, very beautiful, beautiful countryside. We were passing through German. The train would go for an hour and then stop. And we were let out once a day for a few minutes. And I wasn't hungry because I had the piece of bread. We didn't get any food. I wasn't really hungry, but I was very thirsty, and everybody was very thirsty.
You didn't get any food for the whole journey, seven
no.
days?
No.
Or water?
No. The water, you see, when they let us out to go to the toilet for a few minutes, some of the men managed to get a bit of water, mainly hot water, from the engine. But that is for the first time during the war that I felt thirsty, because I never experienced thirst. In the ghetto there was plenty of water, there was shortage of food. But then what happened, the soldier who was guarding us, who was in the middle of the train, had a small puppy, a dog. And he put a little dish of water for the puppy. And what I did, I maneuvered myself, so I was near the barbed wire. And when the lights went out, there was usually an air raid at night, and all the lights went out, and I managed to stretch my hand and get this water that was for the puppy and drink it very quietly and replace it. And therefore, at night, I usually had maybe half a glass of water. How did the others manage? I don't know. Difficult to say. Food. Everybody had a bit of food with them, but I think everybody suffered from thirst.
They'd brought this food from the work camp?
Yes. Somehow they... I think nobody... I shared the bread a little bit with one of my friends who happened to be in the same area with me.
Were you still with Oiser? Were you still with...
Yes, we still kept in touch, although I wasn't in the same. You couldn't choose and say we want to be together. You were just with, but you knew everybody. 600 people is not such a...
How did you sleep? How did you manage it night time?
Was just enough room for everyone to sit, not enough to stretch, but there was just enough for everyone to crouch. And when you tired, you fell asleep. I didn't find it all that uncomfortable, all that terrible. Nobody died on the journey, and nobody was killed except until we arrived in Buchenwald.
What did you do on the journey about toilet arrangements, about those trains?
We were let out for 2-3 minutes, and obviously there wasn't enough time, but somehow it didn't seem to worry me.
You didn't notice it was a problem on the train?
No, and I don't remember anybody fouling or doing anything. It would have been very dangerous because of the soldier standing with the gun, but there were no, everybody managed to arrive in Buchenwald.
Would the train, other than the time it stopped each day, to let you off for a few minutes, was it moving for the whole 7 days, 7 nights?
It would move. Obviously, the distance could be covered in 5 hours, but we probably went into some sidings for a few hours, and then when the line was free, we would go back and travel a bit further up, and it would go slowly for an hour or 2 hours, and then stopped for a few hours, and so it went on. There were some air raids at night, and lights went out, but I didn't hear any explosions or any bombs, because we were not passing through any towns. We seemed to be passing through the countryside.
What time of the day was it when you finally arrived at Buchenwald?
It was in the evening. It was after dark, and everything was burning. The train was going very slowly, and on either side we could see fires burning and buildings just flattened out. And the train went through maybe 2 miles of smoke and fire. And that was quite frightening. But we realized that there must have been an air raid, which it was. The Americans came 2 days earlier, and they destroyed all the factories and all the everything around the camp. But the camp, it was a day, midday raid, and they destroyed all the factories because there was extensive buildings around the camp, but they didn't hit the camp whatsoever. It was really precision bombing. And that's why everything was still burning and the smoke was there. We arrived, we marched for about half a mile, kilometer, and we walked into a square, and a loudspeaker was blaring. There was an orchestra, searchlights. It was quite sort of frightening. And a stray bullet hit one of the men. And that was very strange, because he was one of the men that people were afraid of, because they knew he was a hangman in one of the camps previous, that he was somewhere in another camp, that he was the hangman. And suddenly a stray bullet hit him. And it was so in the dark, and it was so unexplainable.
You didn't know who had fired it.
We didn't know who fired it, unless it was one of the guards, and people didn't realize it. But suddenly the message came through the column as we were marching that, I don't remember his name, so-and-so is dead, he's been shot. And the rumor was that it was a stray bullet.
Could you describe in some detail the scene upon your arrival with the orchestra and everything?
Yes, we arrived, we passed through some gates, and we found ourselves in a square, not a very large one, with floodlights, and we heard marching music and orchestra and the towers with soldiers with machine guns.
Watchtowers.
Watchtowers. And then we passed through that square and went into barracks, and there was no water. And we were very thirsty, and there was no water because of the bombing. The water was disconnected. And we spent the night in a room just waiting to get something to drink.
So you weren't registered in any way?
We were not registered or anything, no. And the following day, we were given some water. Obviously, the water pipes were repaired. We were given some water to drink and maybe something to eat. I don't remember being hungry then. And then we had to strip naked, and our heads were shaven again, and all hair, pubic hair, if anyone had any, I didn't. But having been...
Who shaved you?
Inmates, other inmates, big men.
In the barracks, or did you go...
In the barracks.
They came
in,
to your
in room. One room, no, we had to go into another room, and there all the hairdressers, the inmates were shaving everybody, and they were in the striped uniforms.
And you had nothing on?
And we had nothing on.
Did you object? All,
whatever we had was taken away. Absolutely nothing, not a single item of clothing, not a photograph, nothing could have been taken through. We went completely naked. Then the hair was shaven so that we were searched everywhere, in our mouths and everywhere. Not that anybody had anything to hide by then.
How did people react to this? Were they upset? How did you feel?
Well, it was just, there was nothing you could do. You were just like a cog in a machine, just taken through. And after you were shaven, very stinging liquid was applied to the parts under your arms, where your pubic hair was, on your head. Stinging disinfectant, which burned. And then you were pushed into a vat. There might have been 6 foot diameter and maybe 4 foot deep, with again disinfectant, and one of the inmates would push your head so that you were completely submerged for 10-20 seconds and then taken out.
Were you scared at this, or did you realize that it was simply a disinfection?
No, I wasn't scared.
Was there any sense of panic from the other people?
No.
What happened when you got out of the vat?
Out of the vat, then there were showers, cold water showers. And then we waited for a whole day before we got the striped uniforms and wooden clogs.
You waited in the nude, naked?
We waited in the nude. It wasn't cold, but it just took hours and hours before they found some of them. The one I got wasn't too bad, but some of them were too small or too big or torn and patched up. You know, they were used dozens of times. They were not new uniforms.
How were they given out? How were they given out?
They were given out at a counter by other inmates.
You had to go for them?
You had to go and queue up and you got them.
Did
and
nobody
then,
object to being naked? Did no one feel humiliated or embarrassed?
No. They were all men. There were not many Germans sort of about where we were. The Germans were a bit further away. We got numbers, sort of. I had some astronomical number, I don't remember what it was, on the striped pyjama suit. There was some sort of numbers running into thousands digits. I don't remember what my number was.
Was it already on the suit, or were you?
It was on the suit. I didn't have to sew it on.